But first, we are going to revisit a story we first brought you here on Woman's Hour at the start of the year about rogue refuges housing women who have escaped domestic abuse. Hundreds find themselves in a type of supported housing known as exempt accommodation. This morning, a committee of senior MPs branded this current system as a complete mess and a gold rush for dodgy landlords raking in millions of pounds of taxpayers' money. Their report is calling for change. Rogue landlords claim that they are using enhanced housing benefit payments to support survivors of domestic abuse, but instead just pocket the money. Now, in a moment, we will hear from the chair of that committee, as well as the CEO of a women's refuge organisation, who says she is turning down, on average, one rogue landlord a week trying to source survivors of domestic abuse as new tenants. But first, let's hear from our reporter, Carolyn Atkinson. She carried out that special year-long investigation into rogue refugees for Woman's Hour. Carolyn, please do remind us what you found.
Well, I got a tip-off that this particular type of supported housing, known as exempt accommodation, was being exploited massively by rogue landlords who had spotted loopholes. They worked out there were so many loopholes and very few checks that enabled them to get double or even triple the normal housing benefit payment if they said that they were going to provide some support to vulnerable groups of people who were desperately needing somewhere to live. Now, that could be people leaving prison or disabled people, people recovering from alcohol or drug abuse, and what we focused on, women escaping domestic abuse. Now, we must be clear, there are many excellent providers who do offer this wraparound care and support so that women can rebuild their lives. But as today's report lays bare, an increasing number of unscrupulous landlords are using women sort of as pawns to game the system. They're raking in millions of pounds, but they're providing little or no support. And that's because the rules are so weak. All they have to do is provide, and I quote, more than minimal support. So what does that actually mean? Well, nobody actually knows. Now, back in February, we spoke to a woman called Charlotte who waived her right to anonymity, and she chose to speak to Woman's Hour about her experience of living in one of these so-called rogue refuges.
In one weekend, I was both sexually assaulted and I was stolen from. It's only now I look back and I think I wasn't capable of declining that accommodation, of advocating that it wasn't appropriate for me to be in a mixed sex environment with no staff. I wasn't able to advocate what happened to me that one weekend, and that's just one weekend.
What did they promise would be offered to you to support you? And what did it turn out to be in reality?
They just said to me that I would be given somewhere of my own to sleep, so not somebody else's sofa. And I was put in with a man. I was in one bedroom, a bedroom with a locked door, and I was told that that would be sufficient, but it was dangerous. Someone had put a sofa up at the back of the doors in the living room because it was a known drug house. People had tried to burst in the back door, so there was a sofa. And I did end up leaving after the assault. I went to stay with an ex-boyfriend. Why would I not? Because it's better the devil you know. And I said, I'm not coming back unless I can be where there's some staff. Exempt accommodation I went to first was not staffed. It was part of a conglomerate of properties that was owned by a provider that on paper it was ticking boxes. So I never met a proper manager. I only ever met people that were on really, really low wages, and often they probably did go above and beyond what they were expected to do, but they just weren't required to do very much. It supported, I will be in the office and you will present for a breathalyzer and I will document it. But that's not support, that's administration. You know, what is support? Is it having a chat with me for 10 minutes?
The rule says more than minimal support. That's the guidance.
And I think that's too subjective. I would say that getting two toilet roll a week and a washing tablet is not enough. And I don't believe that two toilet roll and a washing tablet cost £230 a week. The fact you can put a wash on is the least of your worries. You know, what has happened to make you get here? This is not a hotel. It was beyond abhorrent. And what I would say needs to change is that what looks good on paper is not being translated into real life. How can a woman whose life has got to the point where she needs to be in exempt accommodation, you know, it's not gone great for whatever reason, how can I be expected to live with a population of people who are allowed to be 20% sex offenders, male sex offenders, mixed at all. It's noisy. It is chaotic. People fight. You don't know if they're shouting to be heard or shouting because they're arguing. And if you've come from an environment where everything makes you jump, you know, you're a wreck. I've often said, if I wasn't a wreck before I went in, I absolutely was when I came out. I've recovered in spite of going in there.
So that's Charlotte, who bravely explained how she was badly let down because the support she was expecting and indeed promised never actually materialised.
Yes, she's really given us a sense of the struggles that she went through there. Give us a sense, Carolyn, then. How easy is it to set up a house, a system like this, and then start milking the system?
Well, I think the answer is all too easy. The problem is that no one can actually stop anyone opening up one of these rogue refuges. I could buy a house tomorrow in a very unsuitable area. I could open it up, claim to be offering supported housing, and basically get people to move in. Then I would get them to apply for this enhanced housing benefit, and I would claim to be supporting them to get back on track. It's actually happening all over the UK. I went to the northeast of England back in February, and I met a woman called Marnie Burden from an organisation called Expert Link, and she gave me a snapshot of what was happening in her area.
These exempt accommodations don't provide support, so a person will get 1 hour of support a week. And I mean, we've seen examples or heard examples where, you know, they'll say the CCTV is part of the support that they get, but these are only manned Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. You know, like if a woman is in crisis, you know, where does she need? She needs staff on site to provide, you know, really good support.
But there are also exempt accommodation providers who do provide full refuge support, and to get rid of all of them surely would be overreacting.
I'm not saying that they're all bad, you know, because there are some good examples, but yeah, I just think there needs to be more legislation around it just to stop unscrupulous landlords just coming into an area and making money out of vulnerable people.
And how much money are they making?
Well, it depends on an area, because the exempt accommodation rate is different, you know, so it's each local authority or a housing benefit department would decide how much people get, but they could get anything from, you know, like £150 to, you know, £300 a week per person.
How does that compare with normal housing benefit?
Well, some areas, say for example, I mean, like one that I know, if they're over 35, they'd get like £90 a week.
And then if an organisation was claiming the exempt housing benefit, that would be getting on for double?
Yeah, definitely.
Carolyn, thank you for that all-important context. And Carolyn was talking there to Marnie Burden from Expert Link. Well, today's cross-party parliamentary report into exempt accommodation describes the system as a complete mess. The chair of the Levelling Up Housing and Community Select Committee is Clive Betts, the Labour MP for Sheffield South East, and he is in our Milbank studio for us. Thank you for joining us. Clive, let's cut straight to it. Why is it a complete mess?
Oh, because there's no control and no regulation of the whole system you just described. Anyone can set up to provide this accommodation. There are loopholes so that although the organisations providing the service are supposed to be not-for-profit, those organisations effectively rent a property off organisations which make enormous profits of, say, £1,000 a month for a room, 5 rooms in a property, £5,000. If you're paying a mortgage of £1,000, you've got £4,000 profit. That's a pretty lucrative business, and we heard lots of examples of this. So lots of attraction from the money side, and then very little expenditure on support for people who really are in need.
Let's dig a bit deeper then, because you talk about there being loopholes. If I was a landlord, how would I go about exploiting these loopholes? How are they doing this?
Well, landlords have to be not-for-profit. Some are registered social housing providers. Others are not. They're just organisations who establish themselves. But what happens is that you get a property in an area, an organisation, and some of them are criminal gangs and activities, you know, are on the borderline of criminality, and the police have exposed that. They buy up a property. They then get a not-for-profit organisation to provide the service. They charge that organisation eye-watering sums of money, so they rake the money back in profit from them. Then they get individuals, vulnerable individuals, to rent a room in these properties. For that room rent, they go to the local authority and get an amount of money much higher than the ordinary housing benefit. That's why it's called exempt. It's exempt from housing benefit controls. And the local authorities have got virtually no controls over the amount of money they pay out in housing benefit for these rooms. And of course, all that money eventually goes back to the individual organisation which buys the property and makes these sums of money.
What you described there sounds worryingly straightforward. And thank you for outlining how these criminals essentially go about doing this. You single out the impact of this accommodation on women who have survived domestic abuse. Explain, Clive, why things are so bad for them in particular.
Well, because, as I say, you get a house and there's five rooms in it. There's no proper referral process. No social worker, no health worker, no one is coming along and saying, this is a suitable premise for you, you've suffered abuse, we're going to help you find appropriate property. What happens is these rooms are advertised on Facebook, Gumtree, and anybody can then go and rent one. And you get examples, and we heard them, of someone having suffered domestic abuse being in a property with someone who has a conviction for domestic abuse. Because there's no regulation, no control over who ends up there. And then these awful circumstances of people living in rooms without proper locks on, rooms where there's drug activity going on outside the property and sometimes inside the property. And very vulnerable people are put in circumstances where their vulnerabilities are completely exposed to unscrupulous people.
Clive, do stay with us because I want to bring in Becky Rogerson into this conversation. Becky is the chief executive of Wearside Women in Need in Sunderland, which operates three refuges supporting 24 women and 20 children. She's worked in the sector for 20 years. Welcome to the programme, Becky. The report talks a great deal about rogue landlords, specifically targeting survivors, almost tapping them up, we could say. Give us a sense of what you are seeing.
Yeah, good morning. Well, I probably get approached about once a week by landlords seeking referral pathways from our service to fill their properties, sometimes two or three times a week, to be honest, in different patches. So the first question that we would ask is, as part of our sort of due diligence, is, you know, where is this property? And it's quite interesting that's rarely disclosed, mainly because we've got landlords buying up properties in high crime areas, low demand areas, and we would also ask for their policies and procedures. And I can honestly say in 3 years, I've never received anyone's policies and procedures. That's usually at the point where it goes a little bit cold. So, you know, as a specialist provider, we would always be looking at where are we sending people, what's the crime area like, and we would liaise with police and other partners and work closely with our local authority. That's not happening with these providers, so it's you know, the Wild West.
So it sounds like they call you up, they express interest, you then challenge them or ask them the necessary questions, ask them for the evidence, and then that is where, in many cases, that journey ends. And what I want to better understand from you is why it is they are calling you up and why it is that you need to turn to them. Is that partly because there are not enough refuge spaces and suitable accommodation for women who are escaping domestic abuse?
Well, I think there's been an underinvestment in the sector for years, as there has in many other similar service areas. What we've seen is a percentage rise year on year of domestic abuse reports to police, which is the most consistent sort of figures that we have. And I don't think that the provision has sort of kept pace with the increase in demand. I guess there's lots of other, it's a really complicated area of practice because there's lots of other complications in terms of refuge provision. Move on that slows down, obviously that means that length of stay in refuge is longer, so our turnover is less. So there's lots of other issues, many of which I think the reports picked up really effectively. So increasing unregulated supported accommodation takes other housing stock out of the market and therefore slows down the move on process. So there's lots of factors here to take into consideration.
But often these landlords, they do find these women and they do manage to claim that enhanced housing benefit, as Charlotte told us. And often, like in Charlotte's cases, they aren't able to turn down this accommodation. And also in the report specifically, the CEO of Women's Aid said that it takes an average of 7 years for a woman to leave an abusive relationship. And often when it goes wrong like this, it just means that they will go back to that precarious situation. How does this impact your services when these scenarios end up as they do?
Well, it's an absolute tragedy, isn't it? It's a travesty of justice. And Charlotte's story is not an isolated case. I could recite a number of stories very similar to that. Typical cases of prison leavers being picked up at the prison gates, transported miles away, no local connection, and you know, to be taken somewhere where you actually don't know where you're going, you don't know that area at all, is, just disconnects, basically. There's no sort of community there. So that's a huge job for us to then unpick. And as Charlotte said, that you're not only escaping a vulnerable position, but then to be put in a more dangerous position, we're unpicking a number of layers there. So we're repairing the immediate harms that have happened when they should have been in safe accommodation, and of course the historic harms. So what tends to happen is that the unregulated accommodation is picking up people allegedly offering support that doesn't happen, and then they're contacting our services to say, we'll continue to accommodate, but can you put the support that's required here, because this person's asking for support. That puts us in a really difficult position, because another provider is being paid to offer the support, and then we as a charitable organisation that actually cares about people and their experience end up using our resources to put the support in that they're not delivering.
That's interesting.
That puts a huge strain on services.
I can imagine. Sue Ellen's been in touch to say, I used to work at a domestic abuse charity. The council pay for hotels at bed and breakfast. That's a part of temporary accommodation. But instead of a cooked breakfast, the family's got one slice of toast and a glass of water. Also, that is just jumped. And she then adds, also, a lot were calling themselves women's refuges, but they had male tenants. And another one here says, regarding the supported housing discussion, who sets the rules in the first place? Who agrees that they are appropriate? No regulation, no control, says Clive. But why not? If inadequate rules are in place, how did they get passed in the first place? That's one for you, Clive.
Well, they don't get passed. That's the simple answer, because there aren't the controls, there's not the regulation. And what we're calling for is that all these properties and providers ought to be registered, so we know who they are. Currently, we don't know how many there are, who they are, how many people are living there. We think there should be standards laid down for the accommodation itself, standards laid down for support, and local authorities should be able to oversee this and have enforcement power so they don't pay money out where these standards are not met. And very importantly, recognition of women fleeing domestic abuse, there should be proper referrals processes. So women in this situation, indeed anybody with vulnerabilities, doesn't get referred to accommodation and providers who are not appropriate.
Let's talk about money, because how much do you think this is costing not only the women, but the taxpayer?
We've no idea. We've asked government repeatedly, please tell us how much you're paying out in housing benefit, because in the end it is housing benefit paying this money out, and they can't tell us. They
don't know. And why is that?
Because they don't collect the figures, they don't collect the information. It's not been seen as a problem in the past, worthy of particular investigation. They are starting to collect the figures now, and there have been some estimates in the past. I think the National Audit Office said around 5 or 6 years ago, it was probably costing £2 billion a year. It's gone up a lot more since then, almost certainly. So billions, not millions of pounds, been spent on inadequate accommodation, no support in many cases. People have been put in completely inappropriate accommodation. And at the end of the day, rogues and in some cases criminals milking the system for millions of pounds of profit.
Another message, and thank you to all of you for sending in your thoughts on this. This one writes, local authorities do have some control. The one I work for has subcontracted out the provision of temporary and emergency housing, which they have a legal duty to provide, to a totally unscrupulous company who provides poor quality housing and scant support. Vulnerable people are placed wherever is free, not according to vulnerability or need. The amount of housing benefit pouring into this company is eye-watering. And another here who writes, I am a nurse in Bedfordshire. We had raised multiple safeguarding alerts against an organisation like this, and I've never had to do that against an organisation in my long career. It's worse than awful. It is very dangerous. Let's look forward. I mean, what are the next steps, Clive, in terms of recommendations when it comes to housing survivors of domestic abuse? What needs to happen?
Well, we need all those controls and those standards laying down. But specifically, before any money is paid out in housing benefit for accommodation where domestic abuse survivors and people fleeing domestic abuse are going to be housed, then there has to be specific standards of support in that accommodation that meets Part 4 of the Domestic Abuse Act. In other words, there's a recognition that women in these circumstances need particular care and support to a particular standard. Those standards are laid down in legislation and they should be applied in all cases. And the local authorities should be given the powers to check and apply them. Of course, local authorities are going to need resources to do that. But as we've said, there's so much money in this system being paid out inappropriately to rogues making enormous profits. There is money there to make sure this can be done properly.
Thank you so much, Clive Betts there, and also Becky Rogerson for your insights and expertise. And we have had a response from a spokesperson at the Department for Levelling Up Housing and Communities who said it is unacceptable that unscrupulous landlords are trying to profit at the expense of vulnerable people, and we are bringing forward a package of measures to stop them in their tracks. This is backed by a £20 million investment to drive up quality in the supported housing sector and protect the most vulnerable in society. For victims of domestic abuse, there is practical and emotional support to help them rebuild their lives, as well as £250 million in funding for local councils to provide support in safe accommodation. Thank you to our guests, and to Caroline as well, our reporter, and to the many of you who have been getting in touch to share your experiences of your on-the-ground experiences of dealing with vulnerable women in these situations. Thank you to all of you.